Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Galazzo, joined as always by Peter Flaherty. We're recording this one day before the World Series, but for most of you listening, or all of you listening, it is World Series Day. So excited for that. Peter, what's going on?
I'm doing great. I just got back from World Woodbat and Jupiter, which I'm sure mostly everyone listening to this is relatively familiar with. So that was a blast. It was my first time down there. And then In the meantime, I've just been enjoying the postseason baseball. I mean, it kind of feels almost like a different sport than the regular. Like, I don't really know how else to describe it. There really isn't anything better than postseason baseball. But fired up for the World Series, and then that's weirdly kind of it until spring training, unless you're kind of a fall league Nick, like our resident Josh Norris.
Yeah, absolutely. So we wanted to talk a little bit about your experience in Jupiter this year. I'm still very annoyed that I wasn't able to go. Both myself and Ben Badler were planning to go down to Jupiter with you, Peter. It would have been a blast to kind of do the whole crew Jupiter experience. But this was your first year. It was a bit of a unusual Jupiter, just given how it was delayed a week because of a hurricane coming through Florida. I had some concerns about the level of talent that was going to be there, but you seem to have seen a number of really impressive players. Peter on the site right now has two pieces, 10 hitters to know from Jupiter, 10 pitchers to know from Jupiter, where he breaks down a number of players that are going to impact the 2025 and maybe even at a greater level, 2026 draft classes. So I guess, Peter, before we get into some of those players, just what was your experience like at Jupiter for the first time? It is a unique event. It is typically a sprawling, massive convention of scouts and players. It's a much different vibe to most of the summer showcase events. I mean, most of the events we cover and prioritize during the summer are showcase oriented, where there's workouts, there's batting practices, the games themselves have much more of an all-star game feel to them, where pitchers are not necessarily extending throughout their starts. It's very difficult hitting environments for players, but this event is always fun because it is legitimate game situations. Players really care about winning this event. For a lot of players, it's kind of the final event with their travel team. And for some of these players, it's teams they've played with for a while. There are a lot of mercenaries in travel baseball now, and a lot of teams that kind of form up and regroup in different ways. But I always liked the competitive nature of this event and the fact that it is very much like a scouting convention. You got a bit of a unique taste this year with it, but what was it like?
It was a blast. Growing up and obviously getting into the player evaluation realm and the scouting realm, all you hear about is Jupiter, Jupiter, Jupiter. And this was my first time going. And like you said, it was way more unique than in past years, just given the fact. So it got pushed because of the hurricane and the fallout from it. It created a little bit of a domino effect, understandably so. So before, it would not have fallen in the recruiting dead period for the NCAA. And usually on top of the just massive scouts that go, you also have just as many, if not probably a lot more, college coaches. And so that took the college coaches element outside of a handful of JUCO guys, that took that factor completely out of play. So it was a little bit more manageable, I have to imagine, than in past years, just from a crowd standpoint. But it's still, it was like, you kind of don't really know until you get down there, but it was really fast paced and kind of like trying to drink out of a fire hose at times. But
yeah,
the layout's really cool. So for anyone listening, it's at the Marlins/Cardinals spring training complex down in Jupiter, Florida. The Marlins have kind of a quad, and then the Cardinals have a quad. So there are four fields at each. You're kind of trying to maneuver as best you can between eight fields. There are games going on at any time from 8 a.m. through probably 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. And the most efficient way to get around is via golf cart. So you're just kind of flying around in a golf cart with your schedule mapped out for the day, trying to get as many looks at guys as you can. Luckily, the way that the schedule played out this year, it was nice where there wasn't a lot of overlap between top prospects, but it was a lot of fun. It took about a half of a day to maybe a full day to get my feet under me and get the lay of the land a little bit. But
yeah.
Once that happened and I was able to get in a groove, it was really just all fun, like going from field to field, seeing player after player. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it is a unique event because unlike Area Code and East Coast Pro, which are arguably more high profile just because it's all top prospects and mm-hmm. it's more basically just a scouting event. It was cool to see these kids come together. Like you said, it was a lot of their, like, you know, it was their last time playing in a meaningful tournament with their boys before, like, they kind of go their separate ways for the high school season. Some of them play on the same high school teams, but they really do care and they played as a team. And I saw that in particular with that CBA team that won it all. Interestingly enough, that Canes Midwest national team, they're a really tight knit group. There were a lot of others that were fun to watch, but it was a really cool event as a whole. And I'm already looking forward to next year because barring in another unfortunately timed storm, it will really be the full Jupiter with the college coaches there. And you have even more golf carts running around than usual. And then I think also as well, the last kind of unfortunate, effect of the storm was that a lot of the West Coast teams in particular decided to not go. So it dinged the talent level a little bit, but I still,
and for this year's class, that is super impactful just because so much of the top talent is concentrated out West this year. So,
exactly. And so, I mean, there were a handful of high profile guys who ended up not going, but yeah, I thought the talent at the event as a whole was impressive. Like we'll get into it and talk about it more, but it was definitely a hitting centric event. Mm-hmm. A lot of the arms have either, at least like the high profile arms or most of them, they've either shut down at this point, and a lot just in general are out of gas from their spring season, their summer season. Mm-hmm. This is kind of the last time that they're throwing. So it was definitely a hitter centric event. And for my money's worth, the two best players in the whole thing aren't even eligible until next year. And Jacob Lombard and Grady Emerson, like I thought, you know, for as good as like the Anthony Packs, the Dean Mosses, Everett Johnsons, the Slater DeBruns of the world are, I thought Lombard and Emerson were pretty clearly the two best players in the entire tournament.
Okay, well, let's just go ahead and get into some of these players because I do agree it tends to be a hitter heavy event just because of the setup, the actual game situations, and the fact that, like you said, a lot of the top arms are just kind of shut down at this point, which I think is a good thing personally. Like a lot of the summer events are very pitcher oriented in terms of just the success you can have, and they're definitely set up to kind of showcase arms as a hitter when you're coming through, and every single time you come up to bat and it's spaced out beyond like a normal 9-person lineup, you're facing a new arm who's kind of airing it all out. It can be tricky, but what about Jacob Lombard and Grady Emerson are so exciting to you? I mean, these are two names that have been pretty high up on Ben's underclass high school lists for some time now. I did get a chance to see Jacob Lombard at East Coast Pro, and I thought just the athleticism and the foundation of tools and the body that he showed at that event was really exciting. It seems like you got a really good look by him, and he might not even be the most impressive hitter in that class. Like Grady Emerson sounds like the real deal from a hit and power standpoint. But for me, I'm really excited because this year's 2025 class has a lot of high school shortstops, and the fact that we've got a pair of really exciting ones to top off the 2026 class in Lombard and Emerson is a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a kind of a cold take just given how high profile of a prospect both.
I will say though, like probably a majority of the people, well, maybe not, but I imagine a lot of people listening are not super tuned into 2026 just yet. So it probably could be still pretty useful.
Yeah. So the top two players in the class, Emerson and Lombard, I guess starting with Lombard, I was really excited to get a look at him, and he lived up and probably exceeded the expectations I had for him going in from a tool standpoint. You'd be really hard pressed to find someone with a louder tool set, both at the prep level in 2026. Like he clears Emerson in that regard, and that's not a knock against Emerson. And even in the college class, like he is, you know, for lack of a better word, I mean, he's kind of a freak. Like he's got a big league body at 6'3", 185. You watch him even just going through warmups, and he has such a dynamic set of stretches and exercises that he does where he's like contorting his body in these you know, short, explosive sprint type deal. Like the athleticism and flexibility stands out right away, and it translates really, really well in game. At least it did in this look, which I know is kind of looking at it in a vacuum. It's only four or five games, but I was really impressed time and time again. Like the operation is really, really, you know, it has this appealing, compact explosiveness to it with legit bat speed. He was on the barrel all weekend. The impact he was able to generate was really, really impressive, and he got to it with regularity. And he was able to drive the baseball with authority to all fields, and particularly to the opposite field. I mean, he shot the right center gap, I think, three separate times. One was a flyout to the warning track that was hit pretty good. Another one was a triple where, I mean, it was an easy triple, and he flashed that the plus speed, which was comfortably plus. And then he also hammered a double the opposite way. And I think that from a power and impact standpoint, he's continuing to grow into more and more. And I'm kind of curious to see what that upside exactly is, because right now, you know, it's kind of flash above average. I'm curious to see if he grows in even more. Mm-hmm. And then the approach was really sound too. Like there was, you know, typically with these kind of tool shed type players, there's, at least from what I've seen, especially at the high school level, there's a degree of, I guess, rawness, particularly when it comes to just the sheer hit ability. But from what I saw this weekend, I mean, the pitch recognition skills were really advanced. He picked up spin well out of the hand, didn't expand the strike zone. The swing decisions were really mature. I mean, it was, you know, he just checked box after box after box, and then shifting over to the dirt, like the athleticism and instincts, again, they translate perfectly. He's, you know, really bouncy, comfortable attacking the baseball, throwing from multiple arm angles. There's arm strength. Like, I mean, he looks like a slam dunk to stick it short long term. And it's hard to imagine, like, I mean, the 26 draft is a lifetime away and so much is going to change, but like he's going to be in that discussion to go 1-1.
Yeah, he is very exciting. I mean, this is the sort of high upside profile that everyone in the industry loves. Like, it's hard to not like a hitter with this sort of advanced approach at the plate, with the contact skills he has on display, with the sort of physical tools, with the pro bloodlines he has. He's the younger brother of George Lombard Jr., who was just drafted in the first round by the Yankees, son of current Tigers bench coach George Lombard. The body looks good. I feel like he's got a lot of room to add more strength in the future. Like, is there anything in his game that doesn't jump out to you as really exciting or a clear area of weakness? I had a very brief look at East Coast, and I was kind of wondering about the arm strength, but it really sounds like everything else, he just checks all the boxes. And given his exchange and actions and defensive instincts, I feel like the shortstop defensive profile is pretty open and shut case for him.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was there. Like, you're not gonna, like, I don't think you're gonna walk away from a look and be like, wow, he's got a bazooka over there on the left side of the infield. But like you said, I think the baseball sense, the actions, and the athleticism, like, I think that helps to compensate for what might not be like a slam dunk plus type of arm. Like, with the, again, just the actions themselves, like, I'd be comfortable having him over there on the left side of the infield. And then I guess not necessarily a red flag, and like, you know, you can't ask for a kid, especially in this setting, and even an underclass kid, to drive the ball over the fence multiple times. I am kind of curious what the power upside and eventual ceiling is. So I'll be curious to see how that progresses both this spring and then this fall and kind of beyond. But
yeah,
he isn't even eligible till 26. So there's room to, I guess, continue to grow. And it seems like year over year, I went back on Synergy a little bit afterwards and watched, like, he's kind of grown into more impact year over year, but I am interested to see what that eventual ceiling is.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. All right, and then moving into Grady Emerson, it feels like you maybe are a little bit more confident in the power that he's going to have, just given one of the hits you saw from him at Jupiter. But he is number one currently on our 2026 high school rankings. He has been a multi-time USA Baseball national team member. He was one of the, I believe, two underclassmen were on the 18U national team in 24. But he seems like the real deal as a hitter. His operation in the box from the left-handed side looks super loose and easy from what I've seen. I think I've only seen him on video so far, and you've got a really good video of this home run that he hit at Jupiter. But what are your thoughts on Grady Emerson and maybe how these two players, these impactful high school shortstops in next year's class, maybe compare and contrast if there are any obvious differences with them?
Yeah, so I think from a tools and a maybe a ceiling standpoint, definitely a tool standpoint, Lombard's absolutely the louder of the two. But I'd almost prefer Emerson. I think that there might be a little bit less volatility. Not that there are any real holes or red flags that I saw in Lombard's game, but like the offense with Emerson is like, you kind of walk away, you're like, whoa. Like if he was in the 25 class, I'd probably feel pretty comfortable sticking like a first round label on him. I mean, there are some shortstops we talked about last week that I might even prefer him to. But like you said, it's a really rhythmic, fluid, and simple operation in the box. Like, it's a super enticing blend of this hit power tool. Like, he's got a knack for finding the barrel. There's some quickness in his hands. Gets off really consistent and nice tight turns. Drives the baseball. Leverages the barrel really well. Like, I think there's a chance for at least 55 power and potentially 6 hit, which I know is really bullish, but I mean, I feel ultra confident after seeing him even just for a handful of games that.
Yeah, you know. It feels like from my perspective, you had one of those wow sort of looks with Grady Emerson just based on how you were talking about him in our Slack after you had seen him. And I mean, those looks aren't massively common, I would say. It's always fun when you go in and you're really wowed by a player. I think one of the performances that stands out to me is when I saw Kevin Parada as an underclassman at Jupiter. I was really wowed by his, just both defensively, offensively. He just really impressed me in every area of the game in that look. And it sounds like Emerson had one of those like really impressive performances from you. And even going in, I imagine when you're going in to watch a guy like Grady, your expectations are pretty high. And when he meets or even exceeds the expectations that you had, it definitely sticks with you.
Yeah, without a doubt. And he was a guy, again, going in that I had circled, and it was kind of like a, you know, let's see what you can do, because the lights down there are pretty bright, and especially for a young kid kind of facing older kids potentially. And it helps that the first at bat I saw from him was a 423 foot home run that cleared the right center field fence by a good bit. But I'm ultra, ultra confident in the offensive ability. Like, there's present physicality there already. He doesn't have this like freaky athletic body that Lombard does, but there is present strength, and I think even more coming, where there is going to be, again, just this really enticing blend of hit and power. Like, in the box, regardless of class for him, like, if that's not what it looks like or what it's supposed to look like at the high school level, then I'm not really sure what is, because that was, I mean, as pretty as it gets. And then on the dirt, like, he held his own at shortstop. There was one play where I was impressed with. He was going to his arm side, made a backhanded play, planted, kind of threw off his back foot in one fell swoop, backspun the baseball across the diamond. The runner was safe. I thought he was out, but the runner was safe, but like, he flashed some arm strength. The actions are fine. I think he's gonna stick on the left side of the infield. It's just a matter of where. And I think he's certainly gonna be able to hit enough regardless of position. Like, I'm, again, Lombard has the higher ceiling, I think, of the two, just because of the tools that he's got. But man, I like, you can't really call the top player in the class a cheese ball, but I mean, I'd take Emerson in the first round in this year's draft.
Yeah.
And again, he's a guy that'll be in that 1-1 top five discussion in 26. And that's coming from someone who was very, very partial to college players.
Yeah, I know in general, there has already been a lot of really positive chatter about the 2026 class, and specifically because this high school group is getting a lot of praise. Like, I'm really excited about the 2025 high school class because I think it's a solid grade better or more than the 2024 high school class was. But just talking with a lot of scouts and with people who have been more exposed to the 2026 class than me, and even with Ben, like, there's just a lot of talent in this year's or that specific class. And if they just maintain the sort of reputation that they have currently and carry that over to when we actually get into 2026, I think that draft class has a chance to be pretty special. Let's hit on maybe one 2025 hitter who was most impressive to you, and then one pitcher, and then we can pivot into some World Series talk, some rare pro talk on the draft podcast. But which 2025 hitter was most exciting for you?
Yeah, I guess one final point on Emerson and Lombard is not to necessarily mince words, or not to mince words, but like, there were a handful of impressive 2025 guys and guys that'll go on day one and potentially even the first round this year, in this year's draft. But like, just one final like testament to, like, they were the best players in this whole thing. And I don't think it was particularly that close. Like, that's how good they are. So I'm really excited to keep following them this year and beyond. And I mean, they might be back at this thing next year, especially.
I hope so. I want to see them,
but anyways, on the 25 class, not to clump them all together, but some of the guys, like there were a crop of outfielders that I thought showed really, really well, like Anthony Pack Jr., Everett Johnson, Slater DeBrun, and Dean Moss. Moss has been probably the most famous one of that quartet for a while. When you look at the box score of the tournament, he didn't necessarily light it up, but I mean, I was a fan of him. Like, it's a unique operation in the box, but it works for him. Like, the bat speed is thunderous. It's a super explosive operation, like, moves really well in tight spaces. Like, it was an impressive look in the box. The frame itself might not necessarily jump off the page, but like, there is some power and impact that he packs into it. Like, he got the ball, like, he just missed a couple of home runs. Defensively, I think he's going to have to move to a corner. And with that being said, I kind of wonder about, like, is he going to, you know, produce enough power wise for a corner? Like, he'll probably go on day, like, he'll go on day one for sure. Not for sure, but like, he's a day one type in 25.
Hey, be wary of the LSU committed high school outfielders. Some of those guys tend to get to campus.
Yes, very true. He did show better than Derek Curiel did, but I day one type, but I'm kind of curious how the eventual offensive production is going to play out. But
he remains like a very polarizing high school player throughout the scouting industry. I wonder if he will be this sort of like PJ Morlando type who has, they're very different profiles, but I just mean in the sense that he is like an established hitter in the class who has a long track record of performance, but just has a lot of split camp opinions on him. And if he still winds up going good, like PJ Morlando did, despite a lot of like pessimistic or skeptical chatter about him from the scouting community, I'll be really curious like where he slots and ends up on draft day.
Yeah. Like, I'd have, like, I left and walked away having him on day one. But yeah, I'm curious to see where he eventually falls and what he does, this spring. And then I guess sticking with the Canes national team, I really liked Everett Johnson. Like, it's without a doubt hit over power, but you know, I'm a sucker for a good hit tool and a polished hit tool, especially at the prep level. And he flashed it. I think he went 10 for 14 or something like that in five games. I think it was all singles, if not for one double, but like, it's a prototypical leadoff look. Like, I think the hit tool is a 55 teetering on a six. The approach and swing decisions are both really polished. He's a plus runner. He has a knack for finding the barrel, and when you kind of pair his high level approach with his ability to move the baseball, it makes for a really difficult out at the top of the order.
Yeah,
you can kind of shoot a gap on occasion. The run tool and his instincts translate well into the outfield. I like I'm trying to think of where he kind of slots in draft wise. He's committed to NC State. Probably day two, like early to mid day two, fourth to seventh ish round type, maybe third to sixth. Yeah. Just again, it's very much hit over power. I think not necessarily gloss over him, but to go to Slater DeBrun, like another guy who, if you just looked at the box score of each game in the tournament, you wouldn't really necessarily come away blown away. But I was a really interesting look at him. Like when you're comparing him versus like a Dean Moss type, I'd almost prefer DeBrun. I did hone in more on DeBrun than I did Moss, not necessarily by design, but I was around that USA Prime Tigers team a lot. Same with that Canes team, but the Tigers team a lot. And it's sort of that same prototypical leadoff archetype as Everett Johnson, but with more physicality. Like there's some real upper body strength with DeBrun, like kind of this like toy cannon look, but he's a finished product right now, and it's a compact frame at 5'9", if that, but like I saw some pretty impressive strength packed into it. Like there's just a louder overall tool set than someone like an Everett Johnson. It's short level swing from the left side, like clear bat speed. He kind of sprays the whole field with line drives, but like there's clearly the ability in there to drive the baseball a little bit. He didn't do it in my look, but like there's impact in there, and he's a plus runner. He knows how to run. He wreaked havoc on the bases all weekend. And like his speed and instincts translate, at least I thought they translated well into center field, where like the arm is average, but I mean like the speed and athleticism in baseball sense all kind of make up for lack of bazooka arm, I guess. If you want to just phrase it like that, like that's another guy that, you know, I would take in day one. He really competes in the box, like active takes, doesn't waste a pitch, doesn't take a pitch off. Like I know that these are kind of stereotypical phrases, but
There's only so many ways to describe players. So
exactly. It was a really like high energy, fun look. Like there are tools. I'm confident in his ability to hit, even though again, he didn't necessarily light it up, but like another player that I really liked. And then I guess not lastly, because there I wrote about
his swing. Quickly, his swing, as I was looking at De Bruyne's swing that we had in your piece, it kind of reminds me of Sal Frelick, the player overall a little bit. I don't know if that's a horrible comp, but like how direct it is and how slashy it is at times to the ball, and just his tool set and like stature. I wonder if he could develop into a player like that.
Yeah, that's a great comp. Body comp wise, I think he's got a little bit of physicality on Sal. Like Sal was, at least at this stage, certainly not as like, DeBrun necessarily isn't like barrel chest, like, but you walk by him at the field and you're like, okay, like this kid, like, you know, he's already
listed at the same weight that Sal Frelick is listed at right now, as a 24-year-old. So,
yeah. And like, he's a finished product for sure, but I don't think that's necessarily like, that's not a huge secret. Like, and I don't think that's a huge ding on the profile. And I'm with you on the swing. Like it is really level and direct, like barrels in the hitting zone. Like that one swing I sent, which was a base hit, I think up the middle. That was one of his best swings of the tournament. But again, like the good with him looks really good. And I think the intangibles that he's got combined with the tools make for a really fun player. Like I would take him on day one. Without a doubt. And I know that might even be conservative and he'll go pretty good on day one, but can say that pretty comfortably after this weekend. And then I guess lastly, and he's also an outfielder, Anthony Pack Jr. It was a really intriguing look at him. Went 4 for 10, one RBI, all were singles. Again, like the tools really stood out with him. I think the name of the game with Pack Jr. and it's an appealing duo. It's twitch and tools, like ultra twitchy, explosive bat speed. It kind of helps compensate for his really wiry 5'11", 170, 175 pound frame. I think he can add a little bit to it. The barrel just explodes through the hitting zone, line drives all weekend. Plus runner and another really good athlete. And I think that those are, again, two qualities that help him out in the outfield. They had him in left, right, and center. I think he played two or three games in center and then maybe one in each corner. I think he'll get a chance to try and prove himself to stick in center field long-term. I don't know if he's necessarily a slam dunk center field guy long-term, but he'll get his chance to prove himself there professionally. And I think that there's more power potential there, even if he just adds on 10 plus pounds. I think that there's enough there. And in today's game, I think where it's clear, bat speed more or less is, I don't want to say king because that can be misinterpreted, but bat speed is really, really important in developing bat speed. And he's already got, extremely high level bat speed. So if he's able to just add a little bit more strength, I think that there is legit power upside there. And like I said, the feel and knack for the barrel was already present. So I was really excited in my look. I think that they're like everyone else here, but there's, I think, day one upside with Pack Jr. The tools are really, really appealing.
Yeah, cool. So that's a good grouping of outfielders from the 25 class to keep an eye on. Let's hit on a pitcher or two that you were excited about, and then I'll also just encourage everyone, if you want more of Peter's insight into all these players and more players that stood out to him, he's got two pieces on the site that I would encourage you to check out. But acknowledging that it is a hitter forward event, were there any arms that were particularly exciting to you, either for performance or stuff or both?
Yeah, so hitters were king for sure this event. I don't want to, there were arms that stood out, but, it was all hitters. Noah Yoder was, I think, the headliner coming into the event. 6'5", prep righty from Northern Virginia, from Mechanicsville. Committed to Duke. Everyone knew he was going to light it up radar gun-wise, and he did. I think his 98 was the best individual bolt of the tournament. He was good. It was more thrower than it was pitcher, I think, right now. Fastball, again, he was 4-6, 5-8 in the first inning plus, and then it fell down to more in the low 90s. And again, I wouldn't put too much stock into that just because it is the last event of the year. All these kids are kind of gassed, and I'd just be wary of that. But snapped off a couple of good breaking balls, was a little bit erratic command wise, but he's got this physical 6'5 body. I think the pitchability taking a step forward and dialing in a quality third pitch are going to be key for him. But I don't know, I thought he was a fourth to seventh round type. He is committed to Duke. I don't really know anything about the signability, but I'd be happy getting him in the middle of day two with the present stuff, the body, being able to develop that. I think there's some low hanging fruit in the delivery you can clean up as well. So
agreed.
It was a good look at him. And then outside of Yoder, I'm trying to Luke Billings had the best, I think, individual start of the tournament. Went 6 shutout innings. Allowed 3 hits, all were singles, racked up 13 strikeouts, walked only one, pounded the strike zone. Fastball was just in the low 90s, and then mixed in a couple of breaking balls. His slider was definitely the better of the two, kind of tight and in the low 80s, somewhat high spin with some lateral tilt, and then just his curveball was okay. And he's got an advanced feel for the slider. I liked how he moved on the mound, good body, A&M commit. I think he'll definitely have some draft buzz this spring. And then Charlie Wilcox, that first day, everyone was really excited to see the USA Prime, which was loaded, that USA Prime Tigers scout team. They had the, I guess you could call it the primetime slot at 8:00 at night, and Wilcox was towing the rubber. He was kind of the guy, at least on the mound, on the first day that everyone was looking forward to seeing, and he was solid. Didn't allow a hit across 3 2/3 innings. one earned run, issued a pair of walks, racked up 7 strikeouts. Early on, he was really, really good. He was dialed in. I think in the first, he pitched 2-4. And then even in the second inning and beyond, it was more 90-92. And then by the end, it was 89-91. But mm-hmm. like I mentioned with Yoder, I wouldn't look too much into that. Like, it's like these kids are pretty gassed. So, but I really liked the look of him on the mound. Like, the command kind of dwindled as the outing went on, and so did the velocity, which, like, it wasn't an emphatic end to his start. I think he got pulled after issuing a couple of walks to load the bases, but really strong athletic build at 6'3", 210. Like, there's a ton of arm speed. He's a really good athlete on the mound. Like, varied his tempo well, like, mixed in a couple of different delivery types. Like, the body athleticism combo, I think, is really exciting with him.
Yeah.
And the fastball had some life through the zone, snapped off a couple of good breaking balls that generated some swing and miss. So I think, kind of like Yoder, he fits in that mid day two bucket for me this July. And then another guy was Riley Gibson. And again, like, it was a very hitter centric event. And that's not a knock on any of these guys. A lot of them threw well, and they'll be draft picks this year or beyond when they get to college. But I think he opened plenty of eyes in his one appearance of the tournament. And he's on the Canes national team. He's somehow uncommitted 2025. But came in with the game already out of reach, racked up 3 strikeouts in his one inning of work. I would highly recommend checking out the video of him if you can, because you'll get a better picture of why I think I and others are excited about him. But really live arm, like fastball slider. It was a relieverish look, but he was up to 94 with a really, really sharp slider. Ultra athletic mover on the mound, super quick arm, like low 3/4 slot. Again, like, reliever look in what I saw, but like, I think that there's a really intriguing combo of athleticism and upside with him. Like, I think that this spring in the Carolinas, like, keep a really close eye on him, because again, that's a guy who, I don't know, I'd be really excited about him. So maybe I got a really good look at him, but he was very, very good. So
cool.
That's kind of what I got on the arms.
Nice. Well, a lot of this podcast on the draft side was you kind of just breaking it all down. Hopefully next year I'll be there in person and have some things to say about players as well. But it sounds like Jupiter was overall a success for you, Peter. So congrats and thanks for breaking it down for us.
Absolutely. I'm happy I finally was able to get down there. And I know, I think for as fun as this year was, next year will be even better.
Yeah. Well, this isn't necessarily a pro podcast, but it is the World Series and we are Baseball America here. So I couldn't get out of here without at least asking you what your thoughts are on the upcoming Dodgers-Yankees World Series matchup, particularly since, you know, you were employed by the Yankees at one stage to scout players for them. So do you have any glaring hot takes, any predictions for the series, anything you're most looking forward to? Me and Ben recorded before, I mean, you hopped on to record this episode, and my official prediction is Dodgers in 6. I think he had the same prediction as well, but what are your thoughts on the series?
I'm fired up. I don't really get the, and it might just be my Twitter, but I don't really get why some people are like not as excited about this matchup. And I think that's just people like,
yeah,
someone's always going to be unhappy. Like, whether it was last year with the Rangers and the Diamondbacks, people being like, I wish it was more bigger market teams. And then this year it's like, I wish it was more underdogs. Like, this
the grass, hockey. The grass is always greener, I feel like. And it does seem like there is some sense of, when there's a team like the D-backs who makes it in, I think there are some people maybe who are upset that the best teams necessarily didn't get to the series. But if you're not a D-backs fan, I don't think a lot of fans have particular animosity towards Arizona, but it's very easy for people who are otherwise unattached to the Dodgers or Yankees to just dislike them because they spend a lot. They're big market teams. They've had so much success in the past. It's kind of like the Chiefs effect in football. Like, once you succeed a few times, people start to get really annoyed by you. So typically, if you have like maybe just a middle of the road team that hasn't had a lot of success. Like, there are not a lot of fan bases, unless you're an interdivision rival or something, that are going to get too fired up. But I think there's some of that. But for me, like, as someone who is just watching, I'm thrilled that it doesn't seem like we often get the best team in each league matching up in the World Series. So I'm excited about that. And this is just a super star laden World Series. And I can't wait to see which of the stars really perform at the biggest stage. This is ultimately what we want to see, right? The best players in baseball, the best teams in baseball competing for the biggest prize in baseball. And that's what we're going to get starting today as you're listening to this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm super juiced up. Like, this is the clash of the Titans, like the two best teams. Like, I think it's really, really hard to not be excited about it. And I, like, selfishly, I want it to go seven games. Just I want every yes. World Series to go seven games.
Of course.
I'll say Yankees in seven, but I think it's going to be a really, really good series. Like, it's Shohei versus Judge. You got Stan, Mookie, Freddie Freeman, Anthony Volpe. You could really kind of go up and down the roster for both of these teams and name almost every guy. Like, I think it's just going to be a lot of fun. I think the key for the Yankees, and really the Dodgers too, but especially the Yankees, I think, is a tone setting game one start from Garrett Cole. Like, if he can go out and give you a quality start and put you in a position to win, where,
yeah,
you know, if he can go six or seven and you slam the door with some combination of Tommy Canley and maybe Luke Weaver, you go up 1-0, you win a game on the road. Like, I think that's going to put them early on, literally, because they'd be up 1-0. But I think as far as the series goes as well, they'd be in the driver's seat. So I think a game one win is huge, especially for the Yankees. I think that the Dodgers might be, you know, they're viewed as the favorites. They're viewed as probably the better team on paper. But if they can snag one in LA, especially game one, the tide might turn a little bit. But I'm really, really fired up.
Yeah, I'm most curious about, outside of just the star power here, I'm curious which starter, which like, beleaguered starter who doesn't have a lot of expectations and maybe is thought of as like a weak point on either of these teams. Like, if one of those types of arms is able to just turn in a really strong start to help the team out, if that'll be decisive. And then also, I don't think the Yankees have really, I mean, I know the Yankees haven't faced an offense like the Dodgers in this postseason, not to knock too much on the Royals or the Guardians, but I think navigating this Dodgers lineup is just a different challenge. And I think that the Yankees pitching has created a lot, not created, but left a lot of opportunities on the table that maybe the teams they played previously haven't fully taken advantage of. And I think it's going to be really hard to avoid that with the Dodgers. This lineup just has a ton of firepower. And I expect it to be pretty offensive heavy. And I think that could be a lot of fun. So, my pick is Dodgers in six, yours is Yankees in seven. Peter's outcome would be a lot more fun just because of the game seven nature. We have a lot more World Series talks on the podcast and the podcast network. I think JJ and Jeff yesterday released their World Series preview. Me and Ben talked a little bit about the World Series on future projection as well. I'm sure you guys have no shortage of options to get your World Series talk, but it is the World Series. So if you want to be inundated with that, I don't blame you at all. I've been consuming a lot of World Series content myself here on this end, but excited that it's finally here. This is what we do it for. Peter, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, I'm excited for the World Series. I'm also excited to follow the rest of the Arizona Fall League, especially after the World Series. And I know that Josh Norris will have a ton of great content coming on the Fall League on his Twitter and then also on the site. And Jeff Ponce also put up an initial piece on the Fall League. So I'm excited, especially once the World Series wraps up, to kind of shift focus back to the Fall League and see how some of these top prospects wind up finishing and some of these more under the radar guys who've made a name for themselves, how they ended up doing. So
yeah,
I guess you can kind of get your baseball fix on in some capacity until November 14th. You can really get your fix on however you want, depending on how creative you are. But yeah, I'm excited for these last few weeks. And then like, believe it or not, once I think the holidays hit and New Year's hits and schools go back from break, like college practice.
We'll be gearing up for college before we know it.
It's the college season. So everything will kind of be here before we know it.
Yeah. All right. So for Peter, I'm Carlos. Hope you guys enjoy the weekend, enjoy the World Series, and we will talk to you next time. Take care.